Welcome to Pale Blue Pod, the astronomy podcast for people who are overwhelmed by the universe but want to be its friend.
Yay, it's true. I'm Karin Caputo. I'm a writer and a funny person and a friend to the universe.
So cute. Hi, everyone. I'm Dr. Moya McTeer. I'm an astrophysicist, a folklorist, and also a friend to the universe and a friend to Karin and to you all. Yeah. Karin and I wanted a very soothing, restful place to chat about this episode, because this episode might get a little bit stressful. But we are sitting next to a relaxing waterfall. We're sitting on like a mossy bank, and it is so soft. And the nature sounds on point. And it smells real good, because I don't know if you know this, Karin, but my favorite smell is petrichor.
What?
It's the smell after it rains. It's caused by a chemical reaction between water droplets and like the molecules in the ground. And that's happening right next to us because of the waterfall.
Isn't that lovely? That is such a special smell.
It's amazing.
My favorite smell is campfire. And together our smells cancel each other out.
But also complement each other really well. Because ever... like had a campfire at night and then rain comes overnight, so you smell it in the morning.
Ooh. But it's different. It's good. Well,
yes.
Today's episode is, we say it's stressful because I do think I will get taken back into the moment of the movie once we start talking about this.
Yeah. It's another movie review episode, and I found this movie stressful. I was sitting on the edge of my couch. So we'll... well, just like our typical movie review episodes, we'll summarize it and then give our peeves and thieves and rate it on our very official rubric. I'm excited to see how this goes because it was very stressful, but I did really enjoy it.
Yeah. I had seen it once before as a kid, so it was fun to rewatch as a grown-up, and it was less stressful, I think, on this second grown-up watch for me.
I think that makes sense. If you have an idea of what's coming, because this was my first time watching it.
Yeah.
It was a movie that a lot of people have expressed surprise that I hadn't seen before. But it was about time for me to watch it. And I just didn't know at the beginning that everything was going to go wrong. And I think if I had known already that everything would turn into disaster, then I would be less stressed.
Yeah. Totally. There's so many movies where I kind of scrub through to see what's going to happen so I know if I can relax or not, which is not a way I recommend people watch movies. It's just for people with generalized anxiety disorder. It's a little hack for you.
Ooh, love that. A little pro tip. I don't think we've said the name of the movie yet. We are talking about Armageddon, the 1998 movie?
98 science fiction disaster film from Michael Bay.
Oof. All right. Tell us about it, Karin.
I'll tell you about it. Okay. So it revolves around an asteroid the size of Texas, as they say, that's on a collision course with Earth. And basically NASA recruits a team of oil drillers to embark on a space mission. So the movie opens with a massive meteor shower that destroys a space shuttle, Atlantis, before the meteor shower enters the atmosphere, bombards New York City and other cities, but you really just see New York. And it turns out there's a massive meteor the size of Texas, and NASA learns it's going to impact Earth in 18 days, potentially wiping out all life on Earth. So NASA comes up with a plan to have a hole drilled into the asteroid, which they'll insert and detonate a nuclear bomb to destroy it. And they recruit Harry Stamper, a third-generation oil driller, and he owns his own oil drilling company. Harry is, of course, played by Bruce Willis.
Of course.
And Harry agrees to help.
Because it's 1998.
Exactly. So of course. It was the like biggest star. And the one condition Harry asks for is that he brings his daughter along on the mission. And he really does this because he's trying to control her because she's dating Ben Affleck and he's not a big fan of that. Daughter played by Liv Tyler.
Yes.
Gorgeous.
The cast in this movie.
The cast is crazy. Every new person who came out, I was like, oh my God, they got him too? Mm-hmm. And I say him because there's like two women in this.
Right. Exactly. Also, you have to skip over a lot because it's 2.5 hours.
But the listeners,
there's so many gems.
It is a Marvel-length movie. I could not believe how long this movie was. I didn't think we did movies this long before Marvel, but of course we did. So anyway, after meeting, NASA trained a drilling team, and they were just like, Bruce Willis, Harry Stamford, please come in and train them on how to drill. And then Harry meets them and is like, oh, this isn't going to work. I need to bring in my own team. So then we have the, like, iconic getting the gang together montage, which I do. I'm such a sucker for that kind of montage.
Me too.
But he brings in Chick Chappell, his best friend and right-hand man, geologists, Rockhound, and Oscar. Drillers, Bear, Freddy, Max, and AJ. AJ is Ben Affleck, who we met earlier because Bruce Willis, like, finds him in bed with his daughter.
The youngest Ben Affleck I've ever seen.
Youngest Ben Affleck. I had to Google how old he was because he actually doesn't look that different than today. Like, he does, but not – I was like – this is like 30 years ago.
Wait, well, Karim, before you move on, I feel like I have to have you tag yourself. Like, who...
Oh, who am I?
Who in this crew are you?
I think I'm the guy who... I think it's... is it Chick? Mm-hmm. Who's the first guy we meet who's getting a tattoo that just says, like, mom or something?
Wait, isn't that... Is that Max?
That might be Max. Oh, there's so many little guys.
There's so many little guys. I mean, I want to be Oscar. I want to be a cowboy that they, like helicopters chasing me on horseback.
Totally. So, okay. So then the men have like a series of like funny asks in exchange for working with NASA. And Bruce Willis meet Harry Stamper. I don't want to convince you that Bruce Willis himself did this. Harry Stamper mediates and it's like, can you wipe out all our parking tickets? Can you tell us who really killed JFK? Mm-hmm. Can we never pay taxes again? And this is where I wrote in my notes, Moya, what would you ask for?
Oh, that's such a good question. I mean, I think that never paying taxes again is a no-brainer.
Yeah,
they shouldn't even have to ask for that. But what would I ask for? I want access to all the national like museums and archives for free for life. I want no.
Moya, I thought you were going to say like access to classified documents.
I mean,
but you want to go see the arts, which I think is good and right.
No,
I'm like,
I don't
give me
just
the
mean art. I don't just mean art. I also mean like. Except for the stuff that's super top level, secure stuff. But like, I want to be able to walk through all of the Library of Congress.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I'm thinking of this as like we're all getting the same contract, so we're just like adding things to it. So we're getting the like hall pass through the archives. We're getting no parking tickets. We're gonna learn who killed JFK, and we'll never pay taxes.
Yeah.
And I want income for life.
Oh.
I want, like, guaranteed income for life.
That's such a smart, practical thing. I'm glad you're on this team, Karim. Me being like, I want to read books. And you're like, I want to live.
Because it could be like, yeah, sure. No, don't pay taxes again. Like, you're probably making only cash money anyway, this group of guys. Like, what are they worried about?
So smart.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So over, like, 12 days, they train to become astronauts. They're going to send two shuttles to this asteroid called Freedom and Independence. And then before leaving, some of the guys start to, like, button up their lives or, like, or they, like, live hard. So, like, Chick apologizes to his ex-wife and, you know, you get to see his son briefly. The son doesn't know who he is. It's just kind of sad. Mm-hmm. Liv Tyler plays Grace, Harry's daughter, and Grace accepts AJ's marriage proposal. Reluctant Harry, of course. Mm-hmm. She makes her dad promise to return home safe with AJ. And NASA has been keeping this asteroid a secret from the world. But then another meteor strikes, hits Shanghai, word gets out.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to hide.
It's hard to hide. And they at one point they say, like, there's only 12 satellites that can see it, and we own 10 of them or something.
We'll get to it.
Shuttles take off of that incident. They dock with the Russian space station to take on fuel. But during fueling, pipeline sets the fuel pod on fire. And AJ and a cosmonaut, Lev, manage to board Independence just in the nick of time, just before the space station is destroyed. So pretty immediately, things are going wrong. And we're down a space station now.
Also, I think before this point, I was like, surely the movie is almost over. And I checked and there was an hour and a half left.
Agree. So much of this movie takes place on the asteroid, essentially. Or just in space. So they get closer to the asteroid. Independence, damaged by debris, crashes, killing everyone on board except Lev, Bear, and AJ, who is Ben Affleck.
Very sad.
Very sad. And they evacuate because they're going to go find freedom. Go ahead.
No, I'll save it for the peeves.
So they land 26 miles apart from the intended landing site. So now they have to get across. And drilling is going slower than expected. So Willie, the astronaut who trained them back on Earth, reports to Mission Control that it's unlikely they'll reach the depth necessary to destroy the asteroid before, quote, zero barrier, which is the point which detonating the rock won't save Earth. Right. So then a very strange thing happens where the president decides to remotely detonate the bomb from Earth immediately, which would cause immediate and total mission failure. Weird.
And wouldn't even hurt the asteroid.
And like, wouldn't they would just save be
killing
Earth.
Exactly. People for no reason.
It's like, well, let's just say we did something and move on or something. Anyway, they make some progress drilling, but a mist, there's like a pocket of gas that causes Armadillo and Max now to be blown into space. Sad.
R.I.P.
Harry, NASA, and now the world think the mission failed. Like, there's no hope. And just as another meteor completely obliterates Paris. So now we're down Paris. And then AJ and the others arrive, and there's hope. They arrive right in the nick of time. Well, not in the nick of time to save the day, but in the nick of time of, like, maybe we can keep going.
Right. It's classic storytelling. You set two teams, you separate them, and you make one arrive just in the nick of time as the other one thinks all hope is lost.
Yes, exactly. Yes. And also, this is established already in the movie is that AJ is this exceptional driller. And, like, he kind of messes up when we first meet him with Bruce Willis, but you're still to believe that he is just uniquely gifted at this. Mm-hmm.
But he's hot-headed.
Exactly, exactly. And so is Bruce Willis. So it's like, I see myself in you, like, energy. Anyway, AJ succeeds in drilling the hole to the required depth, but a rock storm now kills Gruber, another guy, and damages the remote detonator, forcing someone to stay behind and manually detonate this bomb. Somebody has to stay, and we cannot go back home. So they draw straws. AJ loses. He's going to have to stay on the asteroid and die.
Sad.
Harry takes him down to the asteroid surface and then disconnects AJ's air hose.
We didn't all see that coming.
I know.
So like, it was like, obvious.
AJ, you're the son I never had. I'd be proud if you married my daughter. Chills. And AJ has to go. And Bruce Willis stays behind. Emotional moment. And this scene I remember very much from when I was a kid watching this, because I did watch this with my dad. But Harry calls Grace and gives her his blessing to marry AJ. And Grace is crying, says she's so proud to be his daughter, which is like a 180 from like how she'd been treating him during this. And after like some difficulty, freedom takes off, and then a second blowout causes Harry to lose his grip on the detonator just before zero barrier, but he's able to detonate the bomb and saves the planet, and the astronauts land safely on Earth, and AJ and Grace are reunited, and Chick reconciles with his ex-wife and estranged son, and AJ and Grace get married, and there's, you know, a memorial to those lost, and this is I remember the ending of this very specifically because of the Aerosmith song that like was attached to this movie, and like all the marketing materials of this movie for some reason like is burned into my head.
Oh, see, I did the song come out? It didn't come out then. The song is older.
I think the song's older. I honestly don't know.
The song must be older. There's no way that one of Aerosmith's big hits was released in 1998.
Let's see. It was the theme song. It was the theme song for the movie.
So and I Don't Want to Miss a Thing was a song for this movie. Oh, I literally wrote in my notes, not them playing Aerosmith during the love scene, because Liv Tyler is the daughter of
I know.
Of Steve
oh my God,
Tyler.
I can't with that. Oh, we'll get to it. Anyway, yeah, I think there was like such a strong father-daughter theme in this, and my dad loves space so much that I think I felt responsibility as a kid for like, this movie is us or something. But like, I don't have that kind of relationship with my dad where I'm just like pissed at him. So it wasn't fully aligned with us, but I felt emotional about it.
Aw. Yeah. They tugged on heartstrings a lot in this movie.
Yeah, they really did. Sure. And like so much of the movie was like silly and fun, but like for me deeply of the time of like the late 90s. And it's really like, this is a movie for the boys. Like, every other joke was like, I hate my wife.
Yeah. That's an astute observation. especially since we watched this because someone recommended it to us with the warning, with the caveat of, I don't think it's aged very well.
I don't know if it holds up. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But that's like a good segue into our thieves and peeves.
Yes, yes, it is. We're going to start with our peeves, the things that kind of pissed us off about the movie. And then because we don't just want to say mean things about it, we will end with our thieves, the things that stole our hearts. Corinne, would you like to...
Yes.
Do you have more peeves or thieves?
I put three of each.
Okay.
So okay. I tried to keep it narrow so I don't have like a series of like little hangers. But my first peeve is the anti-wife jokes because I think marriage like has such a bizarre reputation in Hollywood where it's like it's either framed as the goal and the lifelong thing. And yet there are so few examples of like successful or healthy and good marriages. So it's either like the goal the character needs to get, or it's this like, I can't believe we're still in this relationship kind of energy. Mm-hmm. Like in the beginning, we meet this like amateur astronomer. He has that huge telescope though.
Carl.
Yes.
I hate Carl and his wife.
So they hate each other.
Yeah. I don't hate her. I hate him and their relationship.
Yes. They just yell at each other and say such mean things. But he's the guy who kind of discovered the asteroid at home and then really wants it named after him. And he's kind of like this comedic relief. I think we cut back to him like twice in the whole movie. But there was a lot of like just anti-woman shit that I was like, we're smarter than that. We could be so much funnier than this, I think is how I feel.
Mm-hmm. And you're right. There weren't really women. There was one woman on the team, on one of the teams that went to the asteroid.
Yes.
And they still hit on her.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You're right. Definitely 1998.
Very 98.
View on women. My first big... I did not limit it to three, but I'm now gonna try and condense a little. But I don't like that they weren't showing any amount of national collaboration until right before the launch.
Yes, I couldn't believe that, especially because there's like a space station before that, or like there's like other collaborative efforts we've had.
Yeah, it seems ridiculous to me. I think that other space movies have done this a lot better, Contact showing that it's literally a giant international collaboration. And then they have a line during one of those news clips where they're like, this is the most massive joint space venture in history. And it's like, okay, then why haven't you been collaborating with scientists from other parts of the world? Like, why didn't they see any of the asteroids? Why didn't they reverse calculate the origin of the little meteor shower that destroyed a bunch of cities? Like, what are you doing? Like, that's just so unrealistic.
It was just like such America first nationalism like approach to an asteroid. And I think a lot of our space movies since and even before this, but like so much of space travel and space exploration is framed as like for all mankind, and this movie was very much not. It was like, we have to save Earth, but we're gonna do it and tell no one and just have fixed it. Yeah, I agree.
It's not even made after 2000. What? Like, it's not. There's. I don't understand why this sentiment exists in this movie, especially when, like, why then have them do the refueling stop at the Russian space station?
Yeah,
it's just that, so confusing.
I was confused too. And also, what are you telling the Russian space station?
Yeah.
Hey, can we just get some gas? Like, you're stopping in for like a snack. Mm-hmm. Just passing through. Don't worry about it. Okay, my next peeve. Peeve is an interesting word for this because I think it was just like kind of cringe. There's an intimate moment between AJ and Grace when Harry like gets really mad and starts looking for them. And then he finds them like AJ very sexily kissing her shoulder because she's in, of course, like the perfect 90s cami. Mm-hmm, and he finds them like essentially curled up in like a satellite dish. Making love, or like, you know, clearly it's going that way.
Yeah.
And he's pissed, but he lingers.
He lingers!
He lingers in a way that's like, somehow makes it way weirder. He doesn't leave right away, and his like anger falls off his face. That's like, maybe I should give them a second chance or something. But then in the next scene, he's super, super pissed. So I just thought it was so creepy that he watched. It was just weird.
It's very weird. You're right. I peeped that and I was like, this is too long for him to be standing here watching his daughter in this very intimate moment.
I think if they had edited it faster, and maybe, again, this is just, like, of the time where, like, I feel like scenes were not as, like, tightly, like, we weren't leaving scenes as fast as we might leave a scene today, but that part creeped me out.
Valid. Also love that 5-second scene made it to one of your three peeves.
I know. I just hung up on it for, like, the next 15 minutes.
Fair enough. My next peeve is the reliance on nukes.
Moya, this is my next peeve too.
Military industrial complex. It's gotta be one of the peeves, right? Like, there literally was a military guy who was like, "Why not just nuke it?"
Yes, and they were like, "Great, let's do that."
That's the only thing they can think of.
It was like, "Oh, love it. The brainstorm is over. The great idea came. Like, let's go with that."
Like, these are some of the smartest people in the country, and they've been racking their brains for a solution. And you don't think they've thought of an explosive and the problems associated with it? Like, what is wrong with
you? And I don't know if you would know the answer to this, but, like, is it possible that something this big, we would only catch in 18 days notice?
Okay. That's my next peeve is about the sweeping scientific inaccuracies, but it's fine.
Well, my last peeve was why did they blow this up and not push it away? Because when I was working at the Space Center, and my favorite mission, the comet mission, where the kids discover a comet and have to, like, brainstorm together how to resolve this problem, because the comet is headed for Earth, we never blow it up because that will create many more.
Yeah.
So why are we blowing up this asteroid and we're just going to be like, hey, some of you might get tsunamis. Don't worry about it. It's better than the whole thing blowing up.
I think they are assuming in their faulty movie physics logic that the nuke being 800 feet, it's 800 feet inside this Texas-sized asteroid that they're blowing up their bomb.
It is like pancake, essentially.
Yeah. So they're barely inside this thing, and they are assuming that it's going to disintegrate into pieces so small that they will be vaporized in our atmosphere, which is so not correct.
Okay. I'm glad you said that, because the whole time I'm like, maybe I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. Not that we should take movies as, education, but I was just like, what are we doing here? Why are we so obsessed with blowing things up? And, like, again, a very, like, boy kind of way of, like, let's just blow it up.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I understand the impulse. That's one of the most powerful technologies we have, especially in the 90s. There weren't, like, powerful lasers or anything.
Yeah.
But the fact that it's blowing up with intent to destroy instead of blowing up with intent to redirect.
Yes.
Because we're going to do an episode on the DART mission that NASA recently successfully carried out on an asteroid. But I think that was, like, explosive based, and it was to redirect. It was to push it off of its current course, not to try and destroy it, because we don't know what type of consequences that could lead to down the line. That doesn't, like, our models would break down if you destroy something into so many pieces. So silly.
Yeah.
So silly.
It was weird. There's a lot of confidence in this movie that I don't personally have.
Hi friends, it's Moya. Corinne is washing her hair in the waterfall, so I figured I'd take this moment to thank our patrons who support the show every single month. Thank you so much to our Sunlike stars, Sharn Llewellyn, Lissa, Scott Reynolds, Ian O'Leary, Augustin, and Tom T. You're all so stellar, and I hear that some of you are reaching your magnetic peaks, so congratulations. I also want to thank our newest pre-main sequence stars. There are a few of you, Jeff Parker, Grant Park, and Michelle D. Welcome to the club. You too can support us. You can hear your name on the show, and you can make it to our patron star chart all by supporting us on Patreon for just about $1 per episode. If you sign up for an annual membership, you end up getting a 13% discount across the entire year. That's 1% for every constellation on the ecliptic. So you win, and we win, everyone wins. Find the star chart and our Patreon info and more at our website, palebluepod.com, or you can go right to patreon.com/palebluepod if you already know you want to support us financially. And if you can't do that, that's totally fine. You are still space, so the universe loves you, and so do we. There are other ways that you can support the show. You can support us by rating and reviewing the show on whatever podcast app you use, or you can share the show with real live people in your life. Pick your favorite episode and share it with someone who you think will really love it, because word of mouth recommendations are extremely powerful. So thank you. All right, I have a recommendation for you. This is another show in the Multitude Collective. It's called Big Game Hunger, and it's a weekly comedy show where Jenna Stieber and friends craft the next big video game every single week. Starting with a randomly generated genre, concept, and vibe, Jenna and a variety of funny and game-obsessed guests will take these ideas far enough that, you know, they'll be able to pitch it to a shadowy board of rich investors. By the end of each episode, they will have honed an IP so irresistible that you'll be ready to risk $25 for it on Steam. So get ready to laugh about games that you love, get ready to learn about game trends, and yearn for titles that will surely never make their release date. The show is called Big Game Hunger, and new episodes come out every Monday. Okay, I have something very exciting. I've said it before. This is not breaking news, but we are doing a live show. I say we because it's a Pale Blue Pod live recording, but unfortunately, Corinne and I will be in separate locations. I will be in Erie, Pennsylvania at the Feed Media Arts Center, and I will be recording an episode of Pale Blue Pod. It'll be about eclipses. It'll be about this particular eclipse coming up on April 8th and why it's exciting and special. So if you are in or around Erie, Pennsylvania, come by. And the links to tickets for that event are going to be down in this episode's description. All right, let's get back to this episode, because Corinne has done a nice dry job. There are a lot of scientific inaccuracies in this movie, or just a lot of scientific, why'd you do that? Like, you didn't have to do that. I have a little list here. The asteroid did not need to be the size of Texas. The asteroid that wiped out the dinosaurs was less than 10 miles wide. It was unnecessary. It was Hollywood exaggeration to make the asteroid that big.
Yeah.
Had it been more realistically sized, they could have drilled into it and exploded it in a way that would have made it tiny enough to vaporize in our atmosphere. But because they made it comically large, no. Also, no, you're spot on, Corinne, that something that large would have been known about even in the 90s.
Yeah.
So they would have had more than 18 days as a warning. And also, if this thing, they said it came from the asteroid belt?
Yeah, I think they said it got, like, flung out for some reason.
Yeah. The asteroid belt is between Mars and Jupiter, and it would take longer than 18 days for something to get from the asteroid belt to us. So we would have more warning longer than that, like way longer than months, at least. Why weren't they expecting debris around the asteroid? Because they lost a whole team to a debris field around it.
They lost a whole team.
Why weren't they? It's a giant thing with enough mass to destroy the planet. It's passing through a cloud of tiny little rocks. You don't think it's going to pick some up along the way?
Yeah.
You don't think it's disintegrating itself?
Moya, there was so much of them experiencing space that I was like, what did you learn? Mm-hmm. If you didn't learn that this part was going to happen, what did you think was going to happen?
Yeah. They were so surprised when they really shouldn't have been surprised. They should have taken more drill bits. I don't know much about drilling. I'm gonna say that right
I'm
now.
I'm not a driller.
I'm definitely not a third generation driller. But we have been talking about mining asteroids for rare metals that we don't have easy access to here on Earth for decades. We were definitely talking about that in the 90s. Why were they not expecting to encounter really difficult metal? I understand that, like, they had a plan to land on the soft part of the asteroid, but plans go wrong, and you need contingency plans, and you should not be surprised if you get on a space rock and it has material you've never seen before.
Yes, I agree.
So that said, there are a lot of big science issues, but I do think conceptually, I have some conceptual things in my thieves.
Let's do it.
Well, first, I do want to say that the science community did not like this movie.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Did they say that it was fun, though? Because I do think it is. Okay.
No. At least not based on the articles that I read.
Okay.
It seemed that they were mad at the scientific inaccuracies, and they were extremely offended because of the portrayal of science and scientists in the movie.
Ooh.
They're like, they didn't take science seriously. And
yeah, it had to be the like driller guy who's like, screw you guys.
Yeah. I disagree with that take, actually.
Okay.
I think the science people were not more unlikable than they typically are in a science fiction movie. And I think that they had a valid point of bringing in lived expertise of drilling instead of expertise of being an astronaut, because they weren't doing astronaut things. They were doing drilling things in space.
Yeah, yeah.
They got training. I don't know. But the whole thing about that team was that they were used to doing this thing in lots of different environments.
Yeah, yeah. Because we meet them and they're doing... I remember when I was applying to college, I was looking up like, well, what are the highest paying jobs? And I'll work backwards from there and like pick my job and pick my school. An insane thing to think, but I truly didn't know what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And underwater drilling or underwater welding was like the highest paid job. But it's like most dangerous job in the world.
Yeah. I mean, but there are a lot of jobs like that that are quite lucrative.
Yep. Yep. So I can see what drew the Bruce Willis, Harry Stamper family to drilling.
Yes. I imagine if he's third generation, right? So if his grandpa was like, if I start this family business one day, my grandson's going to go to an asteroid.
Yes. And Liv Tyler was like working on that boat.
Yeah.
I wasn't fully clear on what their past was, because at some point she's like, you left the family. Like she kind of is just like, you've hurt the family. But she was still functioning as like a manager on this drilling boat when we meet her.
Yeah, I got the sense that she did a lot of the business side of things.
Yes, and she would be fourth generation, so keep it in the fam.
She knows that business.
Okay, one of my thieves is, this is so small and silly, but when the title comes on screen, it blows up. Like how they're going to blow up the asteroid before it's like Armageddon and then it explodes. And I'm like, I don't think we're having fun like that these days.
Ooh.
I am so into a good title sequence, and I feel like we are there for a lot of television, but a lot of the movies I've been watching recently, I'm like, we should be having fun through like everything we put on a screen. And some movies do it really well. But this one I thought was like, oh, that's a fun tone setting for this movie of like, things are going to explode. It's going to be the stakes are going to be high. I loved it.
Was this one of Michael Bay's earlier movies? I don't know how long he's been around.
I think he's been around a while, because this movie, I think, had a crazy budget, which means that he must have been doing something.
Because I'm wondering if people expected that by then from a Michael Bay movie.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Okay. He started in, his first feature he directed was Bad Boys in 95. Then
Ooh.
The Rock in 96, which is another action movie, and then Armageddon.
So fairly early on in his career.
Yeah. And then he did Pearl Harbor.
Wow.
And then years later, Transformers, which is how I came to meet him.
Yes. I think same. Interesting. I also really liked something in the opening of this movie. I liked that little explainer about the asteroid that killed the dinosaurs.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Me too.
Yeah. It was... interesting context. I love a history lesson, and it wasn't necessary. That was just like, they added it in, but it really set the scene. So I appreciated it.
Yeah, they set the stage really well, I think. I said this earlier, but it is in my official thieves, which is the getting the band back together montage and how much I love it. Because I love it when it's done well and you really meet characters in very different, specific environments. So it's like, okay, immediately I know everything about this guy and what they're like and what they're going to say and like, this is the quintessential spot for that character to be. And I love when that's done really well. And I think it can be a challenge for a writer to do well. And I think that this one was really fun. And I think we've gotten even more suave and, like, clever with these introductions since this movie was made. Like, this isn't the perfect example of one. But I just am such a sucker for that. I think it's such a fun way to, especially in this kind of adventure-like movie. Yeah. I do wish there was, like, even one woman on this team.
Yeah.
And that the men's, like, characteristics when we meet them weren't all founded in, like, being horny. But I still had fun.
Yeah, I agree. Do you have a favorite example of that gathering montage?
I'm thinking of, I just watched The Nice Guys with Ryan Gosling and Russell Crowe. And I thought it was great. Is I think it's a Shane Black movie, but it's not a getting the band back together, but you meet these characters in, like, doing something very perfect for their character. Nice. And I just feel like when you can be effective at that, it elevates your movie so much.
I liked all the scenes where all these characters were together. I loved the list of requests.
Yes, that was so fun.
So funny.
And they seemed like they were having fun in that scene.
Yes.
Like, way more than some of the others.
Yeah. All the training montages. And I think that the training that we saw them do to learn how to do astronaut stuff, I think it was fairly realistic. Yes. At least in concept, if not in minute details.
That spinning thing. Yeah. Like, I did at a county fair as a kid. And, like, I didn't think I would hate it so much, but I hated it so much. And every time my head came, like, back up, I was like, I want to get off. I want to get off.
Oh, no. Do you get seasick or stuff easily?
I have. And it hasn't happened lately. I think I'm just better at eating now, where I'm, like, not so hungry in the car. But that's definitely a reason why I was like, I don't want to move this much.
Yeah. I don't want to sound overly confident, but I think I'm pretty good at stuff like that.
I think spinny, I see you being spinny good stuff. At that.
I really like roller coasters.
I mean, I do like a roller coaster.
Yeah, I like the ones where I spin real fast or go upside down.
Oh, yeah.
I like it. And I really like the scene where they all agreed to do it.
Yes.
Like, the reasoning that they each gave for it. I think it's Max, the tattoo guy, who's just like, I don't know, guys, whatever you think.
Yes.
It's just like the nonchalance with which they all agreed to take this almost certainly suicide mission to an asteroid is endearing.
And I like that they all kind of knew they were kind of shitty people. Like, Steve Buscemi's character, every time the, like, government came nearby, I mean, it was a disgusting, like, pedophilic joke. But he was like, they're coming to take, like, he knew, I'm getting my due, finally. They're coming to take me away. I do hope that he does have to pay his taxes if they're not going to arrest him.
He should. He did some very questionable things in the movie.
Yeah.
Is it my turn? I've lost track.
Yes.
Oh, okay, cool. Leaving on a jet plane.
Yeah.
That was so cute. I wasn't prepared for how cute it was going to be. And then when they all joined in, all these big manly men singing this song as one of them leaves his girl behind, like, it was touching.
I agree. Yeah. That was a very, like, wholesome, sweet moment. My final thief is like the general father-daughter storyline. I did cry again, and my heart was thieved. And I think it was the added layer of Liv Tyler's actual dad singing the song that's playing. And but yeah, my heart was thieved. I got emotional for these characters, and I always am sad when a character dies. So
yeah, that is sad. And it's nice when it's not done just for shock value.
Yes, it did feel like I did need that character to sacrifice themselves.
Yeah, that was just good storytelling. I actually really liked the NASA guy. I think his name was Truman or something.
Yep. Played by Billy Bob Thornton.
And I did not know until I watched this movie what Billy Bob Thornton looked like. And after watching this movie, you know, I see it.
You see it?
I see it, Angelina. I see it.
That's so funny. This is not how I met Billy Bob Thornton in, like, culture, but it's up there.
Yeah. No, I think that they showed him to be And this is why I was so confused when I read some articles about scientists saying that they misrepresented scientists. I was like, they made this leader at NASA to be such a human figure who talked, I think his name was Pete, down, like at the very beginning of the movie when the first asteroids hit people on the space station. Like, he talks him down while he's out doing the astronaut walk. He's very human about how he didn't get to do all the things he wanted to do. Yeah. I think they showed like a leg brace or something. Like, I thought that they made him quite likable. And that's pretty rare in a sci-fi movie. This. Usually they make the scientists complete and total jerks or airheads who are like their heads in the clouds and they have no grounding in reality. And I think that he's a really balanced character.
Yeah. And he also seemed like from the beginning, one of the most capable characters we've met so far. He's like, we're going to take care of this. Here's what we're going to do kind of energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll see it. And then there's some sciencey stuff that I don't hate. I like that once they get on the asteroid, things are spiky because it's not massive enough to have an atmosphere. So there's no wind weathering away the sharp edges of stuff on the surface. Yeah. That scene where AJ and Lev and is Bear there at that point.
I think
They jump over a bunch of spikes because the gravity is so low, they can just fly.
That moment, I did think, I was like, oh gosh, I would have overshot that. I would have just shot myself into space.
Yes, and they totally should have. This is what I'm saying. Like, the concepts of some stuff, okay, but in the details.
I can appreciate the, like, intent.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, I am not looking for complete 100% accuracy when I'm watching a fiction movie. They did have a science consultant from NASA who worked with them on the movie. There was another film that came out around the same time that was very, you know how in the 90s, that like there was that thing where two films would come out that were basically the same, but like by different companies. Yes. And the one for this, what was it called? Deep Impact, yes. It was a similar movie that came out around the same time and I think had more scientist backing.
98 with Elijah Wood,
But they did, like, Armageddon had a science consultant and it is not the worst science content that I've ever seen. It's not distracting from the movie. And, you know, once you agree to their premise of, okay, this gargantuan asteroid that didn't need to be this big is heading towards us. And for some reason, all of the international agencies monitoring asteroids have been sleeping. But okay, once you get behind that premise, it's fine.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Oh, I have one question. And I don't know if you know this, but in the beginning, Bruce Willis's character, Harry, is so frustrated with AJ that he chases him around this oil rig and with a gun.
Yes, he does.
And I'm like, seems like a lot of pressurized shit around you. I don't know if you should be shooting a gun.
Yeah, with oil around. Yeah, I also feel like that should have exploded something.
Yeah, but I was like, I don't know. That doesn't seem right to me.
Yeah, that was a little sus. But, you know, that's not my area of expertise, I wasn't going to complain.
I know. I'm like, I kind of love that I don't know enough about guns and I don't know enough about nuclear bombs. Yeah. This is like a place for me to stay.
Yes, you're right. I am happy with that being a limit of my knowledge.
Yeah, that's where my knowledge ends.
All right. So let's go through our rubric. For people who haven't joined us on a movie episode before, we have five different categories. We're going to judge this movie on a scale from 0 to 3. What do we think? Asteroids? Oil rigs?
Yes. I think asteroids.
Okay. So we can get anywhere from 0 to 3 asteroids. And the five categories are first, story. Do we think it's just like a good story, plot, narrative? Next is scenery. This is a combination of writing and production. So the dialogue, the lines, the way it looks, everything. And then there's steaminess, which is intentionally vague. And then there's scientific accuracy, which is, I don't think, very vague at all. And then there's the soothing category. Does this make us feel more or less comfortable with the universe? So starting off with the story category, what you feeling, Corinne?
I think the story's strong. The things go wrong when you think they're going right. Like, things go right just when you think hope is lost. You feel emotional at the end. I think the story's strong.
I agree. Yeah, I really enjoyed this movie. And I think that's largely because of the story and the characters.
Yeah, agree. Yeah.
So are we thinking three?
I'm thinking three.
Wow. All right. That's in honor of Oscar. Mm-hmm. Scenery. So the writing and production of this movie. How did you think it looked, Corinne?
You know, the writing and the production are both like of its era. Mm-hmm. Like movies look better now, I think. Yes. Some of the movies. And I think dialogue is also better now. But I do think they were both successful for the time.
Agreed. Do you think this movie needed to be 2.5 hours long?
No.
Because we need to discuss that in this judging.
No, and I feel like it was 246, 233. You're right. I'm thinking Dune 2. no, I don't. I think it could have been a 2-hour movie.
What would you have cut?
I was going to say, I don't know if I can tell you what to cut.
I think just less stuff could have gone wrong.
I think less stuff could have gone wrong, and we would have had the same emotional journey.
Yeah.
And we could have, like, cut out of scenes faster, and that probably would have saved you 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm. So what you thinking? Like a 2.5?
I think 2.5. Two.
I feel like it's a 2.25.
Let's do it.
Okay. Steaminess. This is interesting.
Liv Tyler really drives that up for me.
I agree. 100%.
And there are like a lot of like intimate scenes. Not like sex scenes, but just mm-hmm. like he's like walking the animal cracker on her stomach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's like,
sweet.
Whoa, this doesn't need to be like so hot.
But it was. And there's Chick and his ex-wife. That was
yeah.
cute. I actually really appreciated that Harry did not have a romantic connection, that the emotional arc for him was with his daughter.
Yeah, I liked that too.
So, listeners, this category isn't like we're looking for the most steaminess. We're looking for the most appropriate level of steaminess.
Yeah.
And I think this movie had a very appropriate level of steaminess.
I agree. It didn't feel like exploitative or unnecessary or like gratuitous. It was like,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
These two are in love, and this guy needs to get on board.
Yes. So, like, 2.5?
Yeah, 2.5.
Okay. All right.
Well, this category is going to take this whole thing down. So. Scientific accuracy.
I said that there's a lot of stuff wrong with it and some stuff conceptually right with it, so I can't give it more than a 1 in good conscience.
Mm-hmm. I'm fine with that.
Okay, yeah. For a sci-fi movie, it shows differences in gravity. It shows spiky stuff. It showed that asteroids would have different metals. Like, I liked that. Even the things that they were surprised by that they shouldn't have been surprised by, they still showed it. So,
yeah,
a 1 seems fair. The soothing. Factor.
You know, I really was stressed during this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't feel like this is going to happen to me. Which is good,
mm-hmm.
but I wasn't relaxed.
No, I was extremely stressed.
Yeah, and things kept going wrong.
Yeah, I know where things went wrong in this movie, like factually. Like, mm-hmm. I know when things were inaccurate,
mm-hmm.
and it still stressed me out.
So, yeah.
like a 1.5?
I agree.
All right, let's
I would even do 1.25.
Would you really?
Because okay. Because I was also sad at the end. It was like... I'm never feeling good.
Yeah, you're right. Someone had to be sacrificed. She didn't get her dad back.
Yeah.
It barely worked, and we lost a lot of people along the way.
We lost a lot of people.
Yeah. Oscar's gone. Is Bear gone? I can't remember.
Did they
kill the one black guy?
Wait, let me command F Bear in my summary, because I think I listed who died. Oh, I think he might have lived.
Yay!
I hope so.
Good for him. Okay, if I'm doing my math correctly, then that's 5, 6, 7, 10 out of 15 asteroids.
Hey, that's good. And as we've said, this chart does not mean if you should watch a movie or not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it. It just didn't do well on the rubric. So
yeah. Hey, yeah. I'll probably never watch this again. But but I watched it.
You know, I would be okay watching it again if someone wanted to throw it on at a party or something. Like,
yeah,
if I was
it would
friends.
Need to be like, I think it's a fun movie to like have on at a bar.
Mm.
Like, mm-hmm. they're projecting it on the wall or something, and you can't hear it, but it's just like Armageddon was playing all night.
Yeah, agreed. But I don't need to choose to pay attention to this again.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But no matter how many asteroids you have blown up, listeners, remember that you're still space.
It's true.
Pale Blue Pod was created by Moya McTeer and Corinne Caputo with help from the Multitude Productions team. Our theme music is by Evan Johnston and our cover art is by Shay McMullen. Our audio editing is handled by the incomparable Misha Stanton.
Stay in touch with us and the universe by following at Pale Blue Pod on Twitter and Instagram, or check out our website, palebluepod.com. We're a member of Multitude, an independent podcast collective and production studio. If you like Pale Blue Pod, you will love the other shows that live on our website at multitude.productions.
If you want to support Pale Blue Pod financially, join our community over at patreon.com/palebluepod. For just about $1 per episode, you get a shout out on one of our shows and access to director's commentary for each episode. The very best way, though, to help Pale Blue Pod grow is to share it with your friends. So send this episode, this link, to one person who you think will like it, and we will appreciate you for forever.
Thanks for listening to Pale Blue Pod. You'll hear us again next week.
Bye.